Starting at the bottom of Kufchet Amud Bet, very bottom at the Mishnah. Haposik ma'ot lechotno. He promises, the father of the bride promises, I'm going to give money for the nedunya of my daughter to get married. Upashat lo et haregel. Ah, right, you know the modern Israeli pashat et haregel is went bankrupt. Okay? Ooh. So apparently. It wasn't so used, this term. I don't know. I couldn't figure out if this is the first time it's ever used. But anyway, he basically, right, going bankrupt, okay, we don't know whether this means actually the father went bankrupt or he just didn't give the nedunya. So there's three different interpretations given, okay, two in Rashi, I believe, and one in, two in Rashi and one the Rambam says. Okay, Rashi says, Pashat lo ataregya, lashom bizayonu, ba'amar no ashe, no chash ledrav. He's just like pushing him off. He's saying, "Tol teach al gabei ragli." What does it mean? Pashata teregel. He puts out his leg. Okay, it's not obviously literally, figuratively, and he says, "Take the teeth that's on my foot." Like I'm not giving you anything, basically. Now, according to this interpretation, it doesn't really match the modern Israeli interpretation of having gone bankrupt, because it could be he has the money, he's just unwilling to give it. The second interpretation is he hangs him on a tree. He says, if you hang me on a tree and shake me out, yeah, what will happen? Like all my pockets will empty out? There's nothing there. That matches more the bankrupt. The Rambam says that he took off. Pashat et haregel, he took off and he went to Chutz Laaretz and disappeared and never to be seen again. You know that he's not going to get his money. Anyway, it's just interesting in terms of the modern use of this word. So, he promises he's going to give the money. He doesn't give it. So, now what happens? Can the guy say, sorry, I'm not marrying your daughter. If you don't give me the money, I'm not marrying your daughter. But what happens? If he doesn't marry her, what's the problem? They're already engaged. And if they're engaged, he needs to give her a get. So now, what are his rights? Can he divorce, can we force him to divorce her? Can we force him to marry her? So what do we say? Teshev ad shetalbin rosha. Okay, until she turns gray, until she turns white. Okay, in other words, tough luck on this poor woman. If the father reneges, emalasot, the guy doesn't have to divorce her, and he doesn't have to marry her. He can push off the wedding.
He can't marry anyone else either, but he's stuck too.
He can't marry anyone else? No, he can. What, he can take more than one wife?
Oh, right.
Yeah, no problem.
Right.
Okay, admon omer. Yechola ishe tomar. She can say, "Ilu ani pasakti latzmi eshev al shetavim roshi." And if I was, if I promised you, I understand. Then you could torture me like this. But achshav she'aba pasak mani chola lasot oknos oktor. My father's promise. I'm not my father, right? There's a good thing about separating between children and parents. They're not all one unit, okay? Just because my father promised doesn't mean I promised anything. Why are you torturing me? So either marry me or divorce me. Ptur, right? Give me a ptur. To get out meaning divorce me. Amar Rabban Gamliel, ro'e ani et divrei Admon. Okay, he says what Admon says seems to be right, which I think we can all very much relate to. Now we're going to see that there's a different version of what the machloka chachamim and Admon was, okay? So the Gemara starts out and says, Matnitin deloki haitana. The Mishnah doesn't, our Mishnah has a different version than the version we see in the Braita. Ditanya, it says in the Braita, Amar Rabbi Yosi b'Rabbi Yehuda, Lo nechleku admon v'chachamim, ala poseg ma'od lechotno, pashat lo et haregel, sheyecholai shetomar abba pasak alai, ma'ani yecholah lasot. Everyone agrees that in the case we just explained in the Mishnah, clearly she's not at fault. Okay? In that situation, she's clearly not at fault. The father promised the money. She's a different person than her father. She shouldn't get punished. Even Chachamim agree. Ama nechleku. So what case were they disagreeing with? Al shepaska hi al atzma. They argue in a case where she promised herself. She said, I'm bringing this amount of money into the wedding, into the marriage, and then she doesn't bring the money. So Chachamim omrim teshev ad shetalbin rosha. Admona, okay, so Chachamim said, look, she committed, she didn't do what she committed, tough luck, it's her loss. She's got to wait till, she goes gray. The Chachamim omrim, Admon omer, yecholai shetomar, kisvura anisha aba noten alai, achshav she'en aba noten alai, ma ani yechola lasot, oknos opator. So what's the issue? When she promises the money, She can claim later, oh, well, I promised you money. This is similar to what we saw when someone sells on condition, you know, they sell, they don't make a condition, but the whole point was they were selling in order to buy something else, and then the buyer didn't give it to them. So now they say, I want to renege on my sale. So the same thing here. She promised money, but she assumed, where was she getting the money from, right? She assumed her father was going to give her the money, and it turns out her father's not giving her the money. So she says, it's true I committed, but I committed based on a false reality, right? I thought the father was going to give me. The father's not giving me, so what do you want me to do? I don't have money to give you. So in that case, Admon says she's not at fault, and Chachamim disagree and say, no, she is at fault. She promised herself. Amar ben Gamliel, roeh ani et divrei Admon. Okay, now I want to point out one thing here that I thought was interesting. What's going on here? We're at the end of the Masechet, and what are they discussing now? We learned, it kind of mirrors the beginning of the Masechet. The beginning of the Masechet, we started out with that the husband has rights to the wife. Once they get engaged, he has a year before he has to marry her. And if he doesn't marry her, he has to start providing her with mizono. Do you remember that? That he, you know, and then there was a whole thing. That's what Wednesday meant, that they get married on Wednesday, so that if the year ends on Sunday, he has till Wednesday till he has to start paying the mizono. And there's this concept that once you get engaged, there's a time frame within which you must marry her. And at the end of the Masechet, now we're seeing that there's exceptions to that. In other words, we're kind of ending with that there are certain situations where he doesn't have to, and he could wait till forever, basically. I think this is interesting that they use the image of Al Jitel Bim Rosha. I don't know why, but it sounds very literary, right? Like they want you to envision what she's looking like, this poor woman, you know, in her.
I also don't understand, because she can say whatever she wants, but she's not a party to this. She's not one of the legal parties.
No, but if she makes a financial... What do you mean she's not a legal party? Anyone can commit something to somebody else. So she says, I'm committing that I'm bringing this into the marriage. This is part of the, you know, it's just like the parents can commit, she can commit. It's a legal... Anyone can commit. So she's committing, I'm bringing this in. And then she doesn't do it.
Presumably he's got some responsibility to check. Like, he didn't have to accept her word. He couldn't have assumed that. I mean, not a legal responsibility, but the same way we assume that a woman isn't going to go marry somebody else without doing research, we assume he's not going to say, okay, I'll, without at least having some reason to think that she means it.
Right, but it could be the father has money and is just unwilling to give it up.
That could be the reason. She may have said it with all the right intentions.
Right, yeah. That's what Adnan's point is, is that it's not really her fault. You know, but Chachamim say, look, it's true, it's not her fault, but then she shouldn't have committed to it. You know, again, it's like, watch what you say. As she should have checked out more than he. She should have checked. She was committing. He wasn't really, you know, of course he's saying, sure, great, you're bringing in that money. And it's not his responsibility. It's her responsibility to make sure that what she says is going to be accurate. But Admon has a little more sympathy for her and says, you know, this poor woman, it's really not her fault. Her father won't let go of the money. And
that's true. And also, how much knowledge did the daughters have of the financial situation of their fathers?
Mm-hmm. Right. Tough to know.
She probably maybe didn't know.
It could be the father doesn't want her to marry this guy. I mean, that's another situation.
Why would she promise money that she could then deliver? It doesn't help her.
Right. Well, maybe she wanted the guy to agree to marry her. And for some reason, the father wasn't committing the money. In a minute, we're going to see a Sheik Dolar Tana. Okay?
No, but I was trying to say before is money cholalasot oknos optor is an empty statement.
Why?
Because she's just saying, the decision isn't in her hands. She's counting on him to make a decision. You know, she's trying to convince him, but it's not like a...
No, but Admon is saying that she can say that to him and then he is obligated.
And then he's obligated.
Yeah, he's obligated. That's the difference. Chachamim say he's not obligated in anything. She can sit till she goes gray. If he wants to, obviously he can. But she's stuck, you know, legally. Admon is saying she's not stuck legally. She has an out. She can say this. She can claim.
She's basically claiming that...
It's not my fault, and I had nothing, you know, I promised something I thought, and therefore the promise disappears, and therefore he either has to go marry her now because a year passed in Higiasman, or if he doesn't want to marry her, he has to let her go free. Okay, so now the Gemara says, Tana, they quote a Makor Tanai that says, Bamed varim amurim bigdola, aval bigtana kofin. This is only in the case of a gdola, but with a ktana kofin. So now the Gemara says, what do you mean? Kofin who what? Right? Who are we forcing to commit what? Kofin leman. Ilema la'av. If we're saying we force the father to put up the money, It should be the opposite. Why? It should be dafka in a gdola, we force the father, because the words of a gdola are more mashmauti. A ktana, we don't consider ma'asim of ktanim significant, right? If a katan makes a kinyan, it's not valid. So if she's a ktana and she promised money, we basically say, oh, well, she was a ktana. It's irrelevant. But if it would be a gdola, then we could say we have to force the father. So therefore, it can't be that, because it's a dafka biktana kofin. Ela amarava kofin labali ten get. If she was a ktana, then we force the father to give a get. But if she was a gdola, then we don't force the husband to give a get. If she was a gdola, then her stipulation is much more significant, and therefore we don't just let it go. Amar Rabbi Yitzchak ben Elazar mishmei dechizkia. Kol makom she'amar. Now we're going to get to the psikot. Okay, we were talking about these statements of Admon. This is one of them. Now we're going to see some halacha about it. Amar Rabbi Yitzchak ben Elazar mishmei dechizkia. Kol makom she'amar Rabban Gamliel ro'eh ani et divrei Admon halacha kemoto. Okay, in all the cases where it says that Rabban Gamliel agreed with Admon, which is not going to be all seven cases, we paskin like Admon. Okay, the assumption being here that we don't paskin like him in the other cases, right? So I believe it's three cases. So in three cases we paskin like him, and in four we don't. Amar le Rava le Rav Nachman, afilu bebraita. Okay, Rava says to Rav Nachman, even the Admon in the Braita. Now, what does this mean? There's Admon in the Mishnah, and there's Admon in the Braita, and they're each talking about different cases, right? There's two different versions. So what he's saying is, if you follow the version of the Mishnah, where Rabban Gamliel agrees with Admon, then we agree with them, we paskin like Admon in that case. And if you follow the version of the Braita, then we agree with Admon according to that reading. Okay? In other words, it's not that we paskin like both, because they contradict each other. But in the, you know, depending on what version you go by. Amarle, mi ka amrinam b'mishna? Oh, sorry. This was a question. Amarle Rav Rav Nachman, afilu b'braita. Sorry, he asks. Even in the Braita, even according to that version, and Amar Le, Rava answers him, Mi ka amrinam b'mishnah. It doesn't say every place that Rabban Gamliel said, Ro'ani ka divrei Admon in the Mishnah, right? It just said every place. So if it's every place, then it must mean every place. Okay? So, B'chol makom shamar Rabban Gamliel ka amrinam. It said everywhere. So therefore, it must include the version in the Braita. Amar bizera amar Rava bar Yirmiyah. Now we're going to have a different statement. Okay, the first one was in the name of Chizkiah, that every time Rabban Gamliel paskins like Admon, we paskin like him. This is now a statement in the name of Rabbi Bar Yirmiyah that says something different. Shnei dvarim shamar Chanan halacha kayotze bo. Okay, we paskin like Chanan in the two things he said. And shiv'a dvarim shamar Admon ein halacha kayotze bo. Okay, now, what does this mean? Ein halacha kayotze bo. So my ka'amar, if we want to say that this is what he said, that Shnei Dvarim Shamar Hanan Halacha Kamoto V'Chayotze Bo, V'Shiv'a Dvarim Shamar Admon Ein Halacha Kamoto V'Lo Chayotze Bo, maybe we want to say that it means the Dafka, we read it differently than it says. It means when we say Hanan Halacha Kamoto, right? And when we say the things that Admon said, Ein halacha kmoto v'lo chayotze bo, they're explaining as meaning that the halacha is not like Rabban Gamliel, who only agree with him in three cases. Okay? Right. That they think it means, and with Admon, the halacha is not like him, even when Rabban Gamliel holds by him. So they say, "V'ha'amar b'Yitzchak ben Elazar mishmei dechizkia kol makom shamar Rabban Gamliel ro'ani et divrei Admon halacha kamoto." In other words, if you want to say that we paskin like Hanan in everything, we don't paskin like Admon in anything. How could that be? The assumption here, interestingly enough, is that Rabba Bar Yirmiyah doesn't disagree with Chizkia. As Chizkia said, halacha kamoto in three cases, right, where Rabban Gamliel agrees. Right, so Chizkia says. In three cases. And then according to this, Rabbi Bar Yirmiyah would say in zero cases. That's what they wanted to suggest. And they say it can't be that he disagrees with Chizkiah. All of a sudden, right, we don't like Machlokot, right? There's an assumption here. They say Chizkiah was a very important person, and it can't be he would disagree with him. So now they say, Elahachi Kamar. Shnei dvarim shamar Hanan halacha kamoto b'chayotze bo. Okay, so still, you know, when it comes to Hanan, we pass them like all of them. Okay? But now, the Shivad Varim Shamar Admon Ein Halacha Kayotzebo HaKimoto Halacha Bekulhu. Okay, what are they saying here? They're saying that it must be that he says we daka pasta like Admon in all seven, as opposed to Chizkiah, who said all three. In other words, they don't mind him disagreeing with Chizkiah by adding more cases we pass them like Admon. Okay? But at first it sounds like they don't, but now they say, no, we still disagree, because Bahamar Yitzchak ben Elazar mishmei de Chizkiah, kol makom shamar van Gamliel ro'ani et dvar Admon halacha kmoto. Amar in, lo amar lo. Which sounds like only where Rabban Gamliel said this we paskin like Admon and not in the other cases. So first we tried to say maybe zero, and then we said, no, but Chizkiah says three, at least three, right? So then we say, well, maybe he means all seven, but they say, no. Look at Chizkiah's statement. He said only when Amar Rabban Gamliel, halacha kamoto, right? Ro'ani et divrei Admon. But not when lo Amar, and in the other four cases, Rabban Gamliel didn't say. So again, they don't want to see him contradicting Chizkiah. So what are the answer? El hachi kamar. Shnei dvarim shamar chanan halacha kamoto v'chayotze bo. Shiv'a dvarim shamar admon. Yesh behen shalacha kamoto v'chayotze bo. V'yesh mehen she'en halacha kamoto ela kayotze bo. What does this mean? B'chol makom shamar Rabban Gamliel ro'ani et dvar admon halacha kamoto and inach lo. Okay, what we had here was a very unclear statement of Rabba Bar Yirmiyah, and in the end, what they basically end up saying is, it must be that he agrees with Chizkiah. And then when Chizkiah says all three, like the ones Rabban Gamliel said, he also meant all those three. Okay? So he said this line, which just wasn't clear what it means, Chayot Sebo. They tried to play in three different ways until they got to the conclusion that they were happy with. Again, whether that's really what he meant or not, you know, a whole different story. Okay. Now we're going to get into a totally new topic. Again, we're still with Admon, but it's a different issue. Ha'orer al sadeh v'hu chatum alav be'ed. Okay, this goes back to what we keep discussing all the time, which is often it's in speech. Here it's going to be in ma'asim, okay? Where you do something that seems to imply one thing, but if you can explain it in a way that you meant something else, that you were doing it because you had ulterior motives, then in the end, we can let you claim that in court. Okay, so let's see what the case is. You go to buy a field from someone. Okay, here's your field. Okay, here's a sadeh. Okay, the sadeh, okay, Reuven buys the sadeh from Shimon. Okay, the sadeh, I don't think these are the names of the other commentaries used, but it doesn't really matter. Okay, the sadeh belongs to Shimon. Reuven buys it from Shimon. Okay, now, comes Levi. And Levi goes to Reuven and says, Ha'orer al sadeh. He's the orer. And he says, look, you just bought that sadeh from Shimon, but guess what? That sadeh was mine. Shimon stole it from me. It was a stolen field. Shimon never owned that field. That field was mine. But what's weird about this case, when Reuven bought the field from Shimon, he wrote a shtar. Whose signature happens to be on the shtar? Levi's signature is on the shtar. Weird. Because Levi was signed on the deal between Reuven and Shimon. Okay? So now, wouldn't you think, because he signed on the shtar, that he says the shtar is valid, meaning that Reuven sold, that Shimon sold the field to Reuven, and it must have belonged to Shimon. Okay? So that's the case. How Orer al-Sadeh, he has Orer, and he says, that field is mine. But behu chatum alav be'ed, he's one of the edim that are signed on the document that say that Shimon sold the field to Reuven. So Admon Omer, hasheni noach lei, harishon kashe himenu. What does Admon say? Levi can claim, yeah, guess what? Shimon is a big bully. I didn't want to start up with Shimon. He stole my field from me. I wasn't going to get anywhere with him. But I figured if he sells to Reuven, you're a bit of a wimp. Okay? I know that I could get... You're a nice guy. I know that I could get this field out of your hands. So I signed on the shtar because I preferred to have it in your hands, and then I'd be able to get my field back. Okay? So Admon basically says the fact that he signs on the shtar doesn't necessarily mean that he's admitting that the field belonged to Shimon. Okay? Chachamim umrim ibed et zchuto. Tough luck on you. You signed on the shtar. Like, if you sign on the shtar, you're basically testifying that the field doesn't belong to you.
It doesn't belong.
Okay? Now we have a different case. Okay? So we got that case. Now we're going to have a different case. Asa'a siman la'achir. What if you sell, okay, Shimon sells this field to Reuven, okay? While he's selling the field to Reuven, he says, these are the boundaries of the field I'm selling you, okay? Meaning that this part, one second, let me just get this straight. Wait a minute. This place confused me a lot. I had it in my head. I have to remember it. One second. Okay. Shimon's selling this field to Reuven. And he says, this is the boundary of the field I'm selling you. And then this Reuven claims that the field next to him, right, one second. Oh no, I had confusion with this case. Okay, give me 1 minute. If Shmachzik, the Machzik of the Sadeh, sells someone a field that's next to that field. Shimon, I think both these belong to Shimon.
Yeah, he sold that. Shimon sold it to someone else.
He sells this field to someone else. And he marks the borders of what he's selling.
And in the sale, he says the neighboring.
And the Ober signs the shtar and says even that.
But there's a boundary. Basically, they share a boundary. They share a boundary box.
And he's
next to each other. And he's basically. He's included in the boundary, but the other field he sold to someone else. Shimon sold the second field to someone else. But in the
who's the Orir? Who's claiming the field right now? Reuven is claiming the field. He's claiming the next door field. Right, that's what I'm confusing who the people are.
Next door field.
There's the Isha Machzik Bashtar, okay, right? The guy who's sitting on the field.
Yes.
He's got, I guess, both fields. Shimon's got the fields. He sells it. To someone else.
Sells one field
to someone else. And then...
But in the star he says that he has both fields.
No, he says the border. Right. He sells to Reuven, and it says this is the border of the field. Mm-hmm. And Levi is signed on the star.
And doesn't argue about the description of the border. Levi doesn't argue about the description of the border.
Which means that the field is...
But it's a third guy or it's just two people? Yechzik b'sadeh nosaf ha-samuch lo mecharot ho l'adam shlishi. Shtar mechira shalom zahim one second.
No, it's just the boundaries. It's just the boundaries. It's just the boundaries.
Vuvit ha-ploni hu ha-sadeh shali.
I think the fact that there's another field is
a
grand. Just give me one second because I'll get this in one second. I'm doing the sadeh shus karkar simanu shalom.
That's all.
Right, okay. Shimon says, I have a plot of, 400 square meters, let's say, okay? He says, he sells to Reuven one side, and in selling it, he says, I'm selling you this half, but the other half belongs to me. Now, Levi is signed on that shtar, but Levi claims that the other field belongs to him and not to Shimon. That's what it means, okay? He's asa'o siman la'achir, okay? So now, if Levi, agreed, in this shtar it says, I'm selling you one half of the field that belongs to me, but the other field is mine. And Levi signed on that, okay? So now, according to this, everyone agrees that Ibed et Zchuto. As in this case, he can't claim that, I was trying to get the field into someone else's hands so I could take it back, because there is no someone else's hands here. You follow? In other words, he's not claiming anything on the first field that the sale is about. Only the first field switched hands. The second field is in the hands of Shimon. And if he basically, in the first case, he was claiming rights to the field that was sold. So we could say, I wanted it to switch hands because I wanted to get it out of that guy's hands. But if it says it borders on my other field, and he's signed on that, it says it borders on Shimon's other field, Levi can't then claim the other field is mine. Because why did he sign on it? Okay? We're going to get to it more in the Gemara. Okay. Amar Abaye. Now we're back to the first thing. The first Chatima of Levi on the Shtar, right? Where we say that Levi could claim, I meant something else. Or according to Chachamim, he can't claim. Ibed et Zchuto. So Amar Abaye, lo shanu ela eid, aval dayan lo ibed et zchuto. According to Chachamim, that said once Levi signs on the shtar, tough luck, there's nothing he can do. You can't claim it was for some other ulterior motive. It's only if he was an eid on that shtar. But if he was a dayan on the shtar, it would be fine. Why? What do eidim do? Eidim sign that the facts in the shtar are accurate. What do dayanim do? This is called, what's the word? Kiyum shtarot. What is kiyum shtarot? We're going to see this a lot further down in the, like, certainly in Gittin it comes up, I know, in other places. Kiyum shtarot is that dayanim come and say, we recognize the signatures of the eidim, and it's a valid document. We know that the eidim signatures are good.
So now, when the dayanim
do
the
that,
content.
Exactly, they're not talking about the content. They're only talking about the eidim signatures. So, therefore, if you sign on a dayan, that makes no, you know, it's no relevance. Ditani Rabbi Chiya ein eidim chotmim al hashtar elam kein kra'uhu. Right? Eidim, there's an assumption that eidim will never sign the shtar unless they actually read what's in it. Aval dayanim chotmim apal pi shelo kra'uhu. Okay, now they aren't assumed they read the shtar. All they do is they look at the signatures. Signatures are good. You know, what does it mean signatures are good in those days? They had records of people's signatures, and they checked the signature. They checked it, you know, like the bank does, right? When the bank goes to cash your check, they look at your signature, they verify it. Same thing with that dayanim would do. If they didn't have something on record, what would they do? They'd have to go ask around, try to find the guy and make sure it was the right signature. Okay, now we get back to this asa'asim al lacher. Amar Abaye lo shanu ela l'acher, aval la'atzmo lo ibed et zchuto. Okay, what does that mean? The case we brought up was if he does it as siman la'acher, right? That he's selling it to Reuven. Okay, but if he's doing it la'atzmo, okay. 1 second. Struggled with this in general. Let me try to get it now. Okay, la'atzmo, meaning right, if he was saying machar et hasadeh samuch la'orer atzmo, right, if he was selling the field that was next to Levi's field, okay, and then he said Okay. If he sold, our story was Shimon sold the field to Reuben, right? And he scattered out the borders. What if he sold the first field to Levi? Okay? Now, if he sells the first field to Levi, and he says, this borders on your field, Levi, okay, and he admits that it borders on Levi's field, then he doesn't lose his rights to claim later that the field it bordered on was his actual field. Why? Okay, and as you understand, he says, Levi, I'm selling you this 200-meter plot, and it borders on your field, okay? But later he comes and says, oh, well, that field belongs to me, not you. So now, why? Why is that? So what do they say? Latzmo lo ibed et zchuto da'amar, I de lo avde hachi, lo hava mezaben le niale. In other words, if I didn't say that, you never would have bought this plot of land for me. If I started arguing with you about that plot, you never would have bought this plot for me, and I wanted to get the sale. So I, you know, I kind of said, yeah, borders on your field, only just so you would basically sign, you know, and pay me the money for my field. Then I figured later I'll go and claim the other half from you. Okay? In other words, obviously they were a bit of a sichsuch about this field. And Shimon basically at least wanted to get his first plot sold to the guy. Then he would claim the second plot from Levi. So basically they say, wait a minute. My ilach lememar, ibaile lemimsar moda'a. That's what could he have said? He could have said, you should have, yes, fine, you lied in that star, so to speak, right? You kind of said, yeah, borders on Levi's field, but you should have at least gone to like a Beit Din or something, right? Set up three guys and given over a moda'ah, like a message to them and saying, listen, I wrote in this star, blah, 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 but that field belonged to Levi, but I didn't really mean it, okay? Because I really did it just so he would buy it to me. So why didn't you... right? Write something down, have it in writing, have it testify in front of witnesses so that later you'd have some evidence. Right now, all we have is a shtar. Like, why didn't you do that? So now they say, Chavercha chavri itle, v'chavr dechavercha chavri itle. Okay? In other words, word would get out, and it would get to Levi immediately, because everybody has big mouths, and everybody tells everything to everybody else. And because of that, he didn't want to, he doesn't have to say, you know, he can't claim, oh, well, you weren't Moser Moda. Okay? Because his whole point is, we have an ilah, so to speak, right? We have an excuse as to why he claimed that he said it was Levi's land when it really wasn't, and he knew it wasn't. And that's because he really wanted to sell his land to Levi, and he knew Levi would never buy it if he started arguing about the other plot. So basically, he did this whole thing, and he didn't even tell anybody what he was up to because he figured it would get back to Levi. So therefore, according to this, in this case, we believe him also. Okay. A case now that happened. Hahuda asa siman lacher. Okay, someone did this kind of a situation. Ir er v'shachi. Okay, so he made a siman. This was for someone else. Going back to the case where there were three people. Shimon sold his plot to Reuben. Okay, and he claimed that it bordered on his own land. Levi signed on it. And then what happened? Levi himself claims, well, that other field is mine. So, but then Levi dies. V'okim apitrapa. But there was someone who was in charge of the nechasim, right, of the yatomim. At apitropus lekamed abaye. He comes before abaye. Amarle asiman laacher ibed et zchuto. Abaye says to him, "Look, we learned that if you duku siman laacher, you lose your rights." Amar ihava ahuvon diyat mekayim. If the father of the yatomim was still alive, havatayim v'amar telem achad asiti lacha. He would have claimed, it's true I said it bordered on Shimon's field, but I was only talking about that it bordered on a little hedge there that belonged to Shimon. And the rest of it belongs to Levi. Okay? So, Amar Le Abaye says, Shapir ka amarta. That's a good claim, because to Amar Rabbi Yochanan, im ta'an v'amar telem achad asiti lecha, ne'eman. If Levi comes and says, yes, it's true, I admitted the field was Shimon's, but what I really meant was that I had given him a certain small area of my field, and that was right on the border. And therefore, in that case, Rabbi Yochanan says he's believed. Okay, so again, we're trying to find like little outs for him. Zil havle miha telem echad. Okay, so he says, so go, you know, the guy says, well, then give me, the other guy claims, well, give me at least telem echad that you claim belongs to me. In other words, right, so now the Yatomim get all of this plot except for the telem echad, which belongs to Shimon's family. So now what happened? Hava alei richva de dikla. Okay, there was a whole row of dikalim. Okay, and what happened? He didn't, if I remember correctly, he doesn't want to lose the dikalim. Okay? So now, what does he go? So he goes, the apitropos, and he makes another claim. Amarle, I hava avuhon diyat mekayam, hava taim v'amar, chazarti v'lekachti mimenu. What he could claim, Levi can claim, if he were alive, he'd say, it's true that I said and I signed on that star that there was this one hedge, but I gave it, I bought it back from him. So what does Abaye say? Amarle, shapir kamarta, da'amar Rabbi Yochanan, im ta'am v'amar chazarti ulekachtiv mimenu, ne'eman. Okay? We have this claim that if he says, I bought it back, he's ne'eman. Okay? Even though I agree that it was his at some point, he's ne'eman. Now, why is that? Because Rashi says, it's ha'pesh asar hu ha'pesh yitir. Okay? What does that mean, right? The only edim that showed that it belonged to Shimon in the first place was Levi himself. So Levi himself, who basically said it wasn't mine, is Ne'eman to say, but now it is mine. It's like saying, if a woman comes and says, I'm an Eshet Ish, but I'm divorced, she's believed, because without her testimony, we wouldn't have known that she was an Eshet Ish. So it's the same thing here. So now, here's my favorite line. Amar Abaye, hai man demokim apitrapa, nokim ki hai, de yada la'afuche b'schuta diyatme. If anybody needs an apitropos, use this guy, because he knows how to get stuff done. Okay? He knows all, he's basically a great lawyer. Okay? That's what they're basically saying. He's an excellent lawyer. This guy knows exactly what he's doing, and anybody who needs one, go get this guy. Okay? Because basically, you understand, first he took this whole thing that basically was shown that it didn't belong to Levi at all. He then proved that just this one talent didn't belong to Levi, the rest belonged to Levi. And then he proved that he could even take, excuse me, He could even take that back, okay? And then he ends up with the entire field belonging to the atonement, okay? Even though...
But if Levi was alive, he could have actually made all these arguments.
He could have also, but he might not have been smart enough to do it. In other words, that's the point. This guy was super smart, and he knew exactly how to, you know, all the loopholes, how to get out of it, right? What the truth is here is irrelevant. Okay? We don't really know what happened. Okay. New Mishnah. Misha halach l'medina hayam. This, by the way, is going to be chazara on some stuff we did elsewhere, although I have to say I don't remember exactly where we had the sugya. I guess in Yavama. Yeah, it's in Yavama. Misha halach l'medina hayam v'avda derech sadehu. Okay, he goes abroad, and when he comes back, you know, the rains washed away the path to his field. Now remember, he owned the path that led to his field, okay, or he had rights to the path that led to his field. But now he doesn't have it anymore. So Admon Omer, Yelech lo biktzara. He should find the shortest way to get back to his field. And then that part of the field, you know, that path will be his path that he can use. Even though, in other words, what's the point here? The path now goes through the field of somebody else. Okay, so we have this guy's field in the middle. We have four fields around it. Okay. And he wants to get to his field. To do that, he has to cross through someone's field. So we should take the shortest way possible. And even if it goes through someone else's field, that's okay. Chachamim omrim, yiknelo derech b'me'a maneh. He either has to buy his way and spend a lot of money. Me'a maneh is not a small amount of money, right? That's it's 100. It's 100. Maneh is 100 zuz. So, right? So me'a maneh is 100,000. Yeah, is that what it is? Right, I'm not confused. A maneh is 100 zuz, right? Yeah.
100 times 100.
Right, it's a lot. Okay. So it's like, oh, another good line.
Yeah.
Right. Right. Oh, the rachba of ear, or you can fly there. Okay. Right then. Remember, no airplanes in those days. Okay. So basically, Chachamim were saying you have to think about the lishon note in this. It's very interesting what's going on here at the end from a Sifruti perspective. You know, we have the Yaltabin Sa'ara, we have the Pashata Taregel, we have like all these interesting uses of words. I don't know why, but it's just interesting. My time a Drabbanan, Shapir Ka'amar Admon, right? What's the difference? What's the logic of Rabbanan? Admon has a good plan. Take the Derech Tzara. So Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, Kigon shekifua arba'a b'nei adam me'arba ruchoteha. In other words, why do they think that Admon makes sense? Because he owned a part of this before, so he should just get back what he owned. Why does he have to shell out more money when he owned it in the first place? So what do we say here? Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rav says, it's not that this was all four fields were owned by one person, in which case the guy has a claim, because he says, anywhere where I go, right, I had at least, right, what does Admon say? Take the shortest path where you're going to take over the least amount of property of this other guy. So if that's the case, if it's all owned by one person, so obviously Chachamim would agree. So Rabbi Yehuda says in the name of Rav, it was a case of Hikifua Arba B'nei Adam Me'arba Ruchotav. Okay, so there's four different people who own the land. And therefore, you know, what's the issue? Each one can say, take it from somebody else. It wasn't through my field. 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 And that's why he's stuck. So Ihachi, my time of the Admon. So if that's the case, though, that it's for B'nai Adam, then Admon makes no sense. How could the guy go claim it from person number one when really it might have been person number three, and now person number one takes a big loss on this? So Amarava, Ba'arba'a, this is what we learned before, if you remember, Ba'arba'a da'atu mikoach arba'a, Ba'arba'a da'atu mikoach achad, mikoach achad kule amalo pligi, de'matze madchile. If four people have bought, in other words, the assumption is that the original landowners aren't there anymore. So, right? Originally, this was owned by four people, and they sold to four different people. So then, Admon would agree that he has no rights, because everyone can say it's not through my land. And if four people bought it off of one person, also they say the same thing. Because again, each of the four people could say, well, look, it's not through my part of the land. Ki pligi, in which case do they argue? Becha da'ate mikoch arba'a. Okay? If there's four people, if there's, right now, it's owned by one guy. Okay? One guy owns all four plots. But originally, it was owned by four different people. Okay? It was owned by, right, two, three, four, five. Okay? numbers 2, 3, 4, and 5 owned each of the plots originally. They each sold. Number 1 came with a lot of money. He bought up all the plots. And now, what's the case? So, Admon Savar, Mikomakom, Darkei Legabach. Look, you're one guy. So, it doesn't matter whether you bought it from 4 people. No matter what, this property is yours. It was a part of your property that belonged to some guy before you. I don't know who it belonged to before you, but clearly belongs to me. Rabbanan Savre, what can the guy, what can the number one guy say to him? Ishatak, shatak, v'ilo, madrina shtar lamarai. Either leave me alone, because you have no claim to me. And if you're not willing to leave me alone, what am I going to do? I'm going to go return the shtarot to numbers 2, 3, 4, and 5, and you go make your claim. And then I'll buy it back from them. And as you have no claim, I could just return it to the original owners. And if it belonged to the hands of the original owners, you'd have no claim, basically. Okay? So basically, that's what Chachamim say. Belomati lishtu'uye dina bahadayhu. And you'd basically have nothing to say. Hahu de amar lehu dikla liberat. Okay? So I just want to clarify now. So they basically claim that the machloke Chachamim and Admon was only in that one particular case, where 4 people originally owned it, and then it was sold to one guy. Okay. Hauda amar lehu dikla liberat. The guy says that I'm leaving a dekel to my daughter. Azel yatme plog lenichse belo yavu la dikla. Okay, so now the atonement come, they split up the land. Okay, this is the same thing, right? It was owned, this is the same as the different case. It was owned by one guy, and now it's owned by, let's say, 4 different people. And now they want to give her the dekel. She wants the dekel, but they say, oh, it's not in my property, the dekel he promised you, it's not in my property. Sav Rav Yosef Lameimar Hainu Matnitim. Rav Yosef said that's exactly our Mishnah, where each one can claim, not in our property. Amar le Abaye Midame. It's not the same. Ha Tam Kol Chavacha Matumatchele. In the case of the fields, everyone can really push them off. But Ha Cha Dikla Gabayuhu. In other words, what's the story? In this case, they should have given her the deka before they split up the property. In other words, the deka was her rights before they split it up. So my tekantaihu, and that at this point, they already split up the thing. It's very difficult to give her the deka. This is going to come at somebody's loss. So what do they do? Litvule dikla, v'lahadru v'lifle gumiresha. They should give her a deka and then re-split up all of the property. And they have to redistribute. Okay, last case. Hahu de amar lehu dikla liberat. He said, I want to give a dekel to my daughter. Shachiv v'shavik tre palga de dikla. He dies and he leaves over 2 halves of a dekel tree. What does that mean? How do you leave over a half a dekel tree? Right, a palm tree. 2 half palm trees. How do you have a half a palm tree? Same way you have a half an eved, remember? 2 owners. He owns one field together with someone and another field together with someone. So he only has 2 dekelim, but neither one belongs to him fully. So, Yatev Rav Ashi v'kakashile. He sat down, he said, this is a little difficult. Mi karu inche l'tre palge de dikle dikla olo. These dikalim now are a big headache for her because she owns 1 half there and 1 half there. She has to deal with each of them, right? She has to go from place to place. It's very complicated for her. Do 2 halves mean one or do 2 halves not mean one, okay? Having 2 halves of a dikla, maybe that's not fair to her to give her that kind of a thing. So Amr le Rav Mordechai, Rav Ashi, Hachi Amr Avimi me Hagronia, Mishmei de Rava, okay, Rav Avimi who came from Hagronia, said in the name of Rava, Karu Inshi le Trei Palgi de Dikla Dikla. It's still considered Trei Palgi de Dikla, and therefore she gets.
So this is what happened. There was 2 palm trees, and she got half of one
and
half
of the
other.
So
the question is, why don't they just give her one whole one?
They can't.
They can't.
But they don't have one. That's the problem. Okay? So in the end, they say the 2 halves do equal a whole. Okay,
mathematical. But that doesn't actually help her administratively.
No, it doesn't. But that's what she gets. In other words, what's the alternative, really? What could they do otherwise?
Right. But they won't.
So they have to join the field one, and then they can give her the other one.
The question is really...
They'd have to go through a lot of legal...
But they're only the same rights in a palm tree. You have it's like having palm tree A and palm tree B. You get the 2 men own half of one owns half of one owns half of the other with the girl.
Right.
They're still going to own half a palm tree, but they're going to own half of the same palm tree. She gets a whole palm tree.
If it's 2 different guys and the palm trees are 2 different fields,
right.
then one of those guys is going to lose out. Right, you've got a project right. here in this field.
Well, you could sell it to him. He could get the money for it, but then he loses his tree.
It's messy.
Right. The question really that they're getting at is when the father said, I'm giving you one palm tree, what was his intent? Did he mean one whole? Or did he mean even if it equals up to one whole? That's again the intention of, now what does it mean he didn't have? Maybe when he promised her, he had one. Right, we don't know what he had then, but maybe the tree rotted, you know, got rotten, got diseased, isn't there anymore, or he sold it. It was in a field that he eventually
sold.
They're
trying to help her, because if he had a tree and he no longer has it, then they could have said, "Well, two halves don't equal one," and he doesn't.
And you don't get anything then, right?
So they're trying to help her at least.
Right, I guess they're trying to help her, but right, because if you say that.
If you say two halves don't equal a whole, which you could in this circumstance, then she doesn't get a tree.
Right, but one second.
Because they could also say something about the value.
I misunderstood something. Rashi says here,
yes,
Shar de Kalim Harbe Hayulo. In other words, they wanted to give her these two as opposed to the other ones because it was a headache for them. Yeah. They didn't want to share these trees. So it sounds like he actually had.
That's what it was.
I misunderstood. Yeah. He had many more palm trees. The question is, can they claim we don't want these palm trees, so we're just going to give these to you?
Because we
assume, right? And apparently they can. So it actually is taking advantage.
Yeah, everyone.
To end on that note, okay. So just to review, tomorrow night I'm teaching at the Open University the daf of Kufyud. It'll be in Hebrew, not in English.
Which starts right on the Mishnah.
It's a perfect daf to teach to an independent because it starts at a Mishnah. It doesn't exactly end in the Mishnah, but ends. Interesting studio. Kufyud Aleph, everyone will do on their own on Shavuot. It's actually a very easy daf. And we'll pick up on Kufyud Bet. I didn't exactly figure out where, but we're going to go through Kufyud Bet really quickly because we want to do the Siyum. And like I said, Professor Pamela Lauper, Yukalisa, is going to speak on Jewish law and Jewish family, and family law in Israel, and how, you know, it's not going to be so much connecting to the sugyas we learned, but it's going to talk about the concepts that we learned of ketubah and the rights of the woman after divorce and after death, and what we do in the courts nowadays about it, okay? And is there overlap? In what cases is there overlap? In what cases is there no overlap according to Israeli law? And she's going to go through a thing about that. I'm thinking that maybe we should just say now that we'll start at the two dots anyway, at Tana Rabbanan. So go about 12 lines into Kufyud Bet. Okay, it's really easy stuff. It's like, it's more, you know, Agada Toden stuff, little snippets. So we're going to start at the two dots of Tana Rabbanan. So that way we have time for the Siyum. Tana Rabbanan beBirchotei Shel Eretz Yisrael. It's on Kufyud Bet, Amud Aleph, about 12, 13, 14 lines down. Okay, we'll start up there. We'll finish the Sechet, and then we'll have about a half hour with, hopefully we'll teach in 15 minutes. We'll do half an hour of the lecture. And
tape him?
I will tape it, for sure. Yeah, it'll be taped and online. Okay, Chag Sameach, everyone.